Live from the Jack Daniels Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena, it's 102.5 The Game, the morning show here with Braden Gall and Steve Lehman, Kevin Kyle Engineering, Julian Council Producing. You can follow Steve, of course, on Twitter at Steve Lehman. There's a Y in there. You can follow me at Braden Gall. A couple of you guys wanted to chime in on this concussion discussion. That rolls off the tongue way too well for such a serious topic. So if you want to hold on, we'll get to your phone calls here coming up in just a few minutes. Sit tight for us here, and we'll get to that. As you know, Steve, you and I just continue discussing during the commercial break about football. So so we'll take a little break on the concussion stuff and the hitting and hockey and football. And if you want to chime in on that again, 615-737-1025, we'll get to that in just a minute. However, Kermit Davis, college basketball coach for your MTSU Blue Raiders, joining us now on the program. Kermit, how are you, sir?
Good morning, guys. Just in beautiful, sunny Huntington, West Virginia. A little snow up here, too.
Going to ask what the weather was like there.
Coach, you got a big one coming up, obviously, against Marshall. You're undefeated in the league right now, off to a heck of a start in Conference USA, but you got a big weekend with Marshall and Western Kentucky this weekend. What have you learned about your team now that you're in conference play?
You know, I've learned that I've got a tough team. I've got a team that's highly competitive that thinks they can win on the road. And as a coach in the first 3 weeks of conference, that's a great feeling. And there's a lot of areas we can get better at, you know, but we have been tested on the road. We've played one of the best non-conference schedules in college basketball. So we kind of know where we are, you know, and doesn't make us perfect, but we're going to really be tested. And all those experiences we've had over the last couple months, we'll need them all here Thursday and Saturday.
You mentioned you've been tested. I think you guys lead the country in true road wins at the moment, or certainly right up there at the top, a bunch of those on the road in conference play to start. How much is that a product of just the culture you've built down there, Kermit, that these guys have won so many games over the course of their career that no matter where it's played, they just believe that they can go out and get it done?
Yeah, I think that is truly a part of it, Steve. I just think it's a good point. I just, you know, these guys, they understand culture, even the new guys that from day one all we talk about is the toughness things that we're going to do in practice will give us the ability to try to close out games in tough places on the road. And we do. We have more true road wins than anybody in college basketball. And, you know, it may change tonight, but to be 7-0 in true road games, like I said, that's just a testament to Giddy Potts, Ed Simpson, Brandon, those guys who have come back to believe and obviously to instill in our other players just what it takes to be a good road team.
Kermit Davis joining us here from Middle Tennessee Basketball. Of course, you can hear the game tonight against Marshall, tip time at 7 o'clock. That game on 94.9 Game 2, and, of course, Western Kentucky at 6 o'clock on Saturday as well. You can listen to both of those games right here on 94.9 Game 2. And Kermit, let me ask you just about this transfer rule thing that's coming up, and everybody's talking about it, and there's a lot of pros to it, and there's a lot of cons to it. Do you have a particular stance on this type of legislation that may or may not be passed here in the very near future?
I got a big stance. It's the worst rule in my 35 years in college coaching.
Wow.
And, it's ridiculous. And it's nothing against players, but it is going to be an absolute free-for-all in college basketball. Because when you get a kid, and I understand the academic piece is a 2.7, and my whole thing is this. If you're going to give somebody a one-time transfer rule, and let it be if the coach leaves that school. If the coach takes another job or the administration fires him, then they have a one-time transfer rule to go. And I think that's fair. But for kids, can you think about the transfers now? So all of a sudden, August 15th, we're sitting there and think you've got your team set, and maybe a couple other guys and other schools lose a couple players, and now your two best players transfer August 15th and go play immediately. And all we're going to do in handshake lines, you know, and different things is just be recruiting guys off each other's campuses. And so I know the fans and the people say, well, it's fair to the student athlete, and we all get the student athlete experience. But let me tell you this, I don't know. I'd hate to be a young coach at 24 years old and fixing to recruit this for the next 35 years.
Yeah, it's terrible, Kermit. And to me, I think maybe the biggest worry I have for it is for schools like yourself or schools like Belmont or somebody else locally here where you work hard and you establish the relationship and you get a really good player, and then he comes on campus for you and he has a good freshman season at Middle Tennessee, and now all of a sudden SEC schools who maybe weren't interested 6 months ago think, you know what, that guy could play in the SEC for us, and now they're recruiting him, just like you said, off of your campus, and now a guy who was a great player for you is now playing for somebody else. To me, that's the byproduct of a rule like this.
Yeah, Steve, it's just fixing to happen. And then what we'll do, maybe we lost to Reggie Upshaw after his sophomore season. Reggie wouldn't have wanted to leave. He wouldn't have wanted to leave. He wouldn't have. Somebody else would have convinced him that he needed to leave. Mm-hmm. A lot of these transfers, the kids like the school that they're at. But other people put other ideas in their head. And what we'll do, then maybe we'll go to another school and we'll start poaching a couple of their players. So it's going to be, the fans can say, oh, it's not this big a deal, the administration and all that. But I'm just telling you now, guys, you wait and see in the next 3 or 4 years what's about to happen. And it's going to happen in college football. It's going to happen in Alabama. It's going to happen in Ohio State. All these schools, Middle Tennessee. And the one thing is, you know, there's an academic piece. You have to have a 2.7. I wish they'd raised that to about a 3 or a 3.2. You know, you have to have a B average. If you had a B average at a 3.0, then maybe you could have a chance for a one-time transfer. But like I said, I really thought, was hoping they'd put the piece, if the coach got fired or the coach left, yeah, take another job, those kids in that program got a one-time transfer rule. And after that, you know, then I think the rule is, I don't know, I just interview one college coach in football or basketball, it's for the rule. There won't be one of them.
I haven't found
I heard Urban Meyer said something, he'd quit football. You know, I mean, I'm just telling you, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's a handful of coaches. I've not talked to one football or basketball coach that's for it. So don't you think that we all know what's good for our sport? We're not trying to say, well, that's a coach trying to lock a guy in. No, we're not. We just understand the landscape of what's about to happen.
Well, I think, Kermit, it's like everything else in this country. We probably need to have more subtle and nuanced conversations about it. And I think, like you're saying, if we can put in some addendums to what's going on, maybe there's some benefit there for the student-athlete. But to just blindly allow people to go wherever they want. And you've mentioned a lot of the pitfalls of this. Just think about – and you obviously have had overtures and had opportunities to leave and decided this is where you want to be, and you've stayed there. But not every coach is like that. There have been coaches that left. What if a coach gets offered a job and says, hey, I'm going to bring a couple players with me? That's just another aspect of this where it goes even deeper and causes even more problems.
If that kid is academically ready to go, you better believe it. There's a lot of kids that maybe would have transferred, but they said, no, I really don't want to go sit out a year. I don't want to sit out a year, you know. You can go play immediately, eligible. I mean, think about it. If you do leave a school, I mean, it's every kid. I don't know. I just what's happened is NCAA, say what you want to, they all know they can't win it in court because the other non-revenue sports can transfer immediately and play, okay? And when the NCAA did that, no offense to them at all, in the great landscape, it wasn't going to hurt your pocketbook. You know, as far as it's not like your top-rated quarterback leaving Middle Tennessee and going to Georgia to play immediately. You know, it's the fact that now, since certain other sports can go play immediately, then they know, well, how come men's basketball and football cannot? Because back then, people knew, and now, exactly how it can change your structure of your team. I mean, what if Brent Stockstill's dad wasn't the coach at Middle Tennessee and it was another guy? Brent Stockstill would go to Florida State and play immediately. I know he could anyway because he's a grad transfer, but what if – I mean, this is just going to happen. Fans got to get ready. Now you're fixing to lose your best players at a lot of different schools. The guy at Alabama may go to Auburn. I mean, so it's going to be something. Yeah. I know people don't think it's a big change right now, but maybe I'm overreacting, but if you interview coaches, this is what everybody is thinking.
No, we're with you, Coach, and I would love to have had a few more minutes to talk to you about Western Kentucky coming up this weekend. I think There's a chance Conference USA could get a couple of multiple bids, but obviously that game this weekend, a huge one for you guys. You can hear it on 94.9 Game 2, of course, at 6 p.m. We know you got a big one coming up tonight as well, so best of luck. We'll talk to you soon, Coach, and we'll talk a little bit more basketball next time because I didn't mean to get you off on that tangent there. I apologize, but we'll talk a little more hoop.
We're all passionate about this, so no, that's a rule everybody's talking about right now. But I appreciate you having me on, man.
All right, Coach, we'll talk soon.
Kermit.
Thank you.
Yep, Kermit Davis joining us there. And I do think I really did want to get into that Western Kentucky game because they're both tied atop the division right now, or the conference right now.
That's a hoops junkie game right there.
Oh, and it's five straight marches that this league has only been a single bid league, and I think there's a chance that both of them could earn their way in. And a win like that, if you were to lose the conference tournament but beat Western Kentucky on the road in the regular season – and pad that resume with their schedule out of conference. MTSU's got an interesting at-large resume come the end of the season. Should they finish as the one seed in that conference and win some games?
So. Yeah, and it's a huge weekend for them with Marshall on the road and then Western Kentucky. You win these two, you set yourself up in great shape.
It should be very, very interesting. So we got a couple people that want to chime in on the concussion discussion, but also I want to get into this transfer rule as well because it clearly has Kermit Davis and most every other coach fired up. As well. We'll do that when we come back. Steve Lehman. Want to remind everybody, ESPN 102.5 The Game and 94.9 Game 2 is the home for MTSU Blue Raider basketball. Of course, listen to MTSU basketball and 94.9 Game 2 tonight versus Marshall with tip at 7. And, of course, Saturday versus rival Western Kentucky, a huge game, like you said, a basketball junkie's dream there, Steve, against Western Kentucky. That tip is at 6 o'clock. And if you're in the borough, tune into 97.5 for the game broadcast and 95.1 for game two. So a lot of frequencies there for you to tune into. Real quickly, let's take a call here. And we're going to get into this transfer rule, but we were having a discussion about the concussion stuff and sort of legislating intent and, of course, the hit on Ryan Johansson and all that stuff. So Chad's been waiting patiently. So Chad wants to chime in from Murfreesboro. Chad, welcome to the show, man. How are you?
How's today?
Doing well.
Awesome. Hey, by the way, congrats on your newborn that's coming here this year. That's exciting, bud. But it's interesting because my wife and I had the same conversation last year. We had our first child in October. We had a little girl, ultimately. But I played football from the age of 6 to 22. I played 1AA. You know, I look back on it, and I got a completely 100% paid-for education. I was the first member of my family ever to go to college. And I'm sitting in my mid-30s now going, there was nothing of value to that now for the way I feel my body's breaking down. I'm in my mid-30s, and I have dizzy spells, and I'm very forgetful, and that's only come on in the last few years. And I've never once in my entire life playing football have I ever been diagnosed with a concussion. But, you know, most of my playing days was before concussions were something to talk about. It was, you got your bell rung, get back in there.
Yep.
I've had situations and days where I was in film study. One of the things I remember most when I was in college on a Monday after a Saturday game, and one of my position coaches asking me, okay, you're lined up in this position. You did this swim move to get around this offensive lineman. Why did you go this way versus that way? And I had to look at the coach, watch the film, and say, Coach, I do not remember. I cannot tell you what happened in this play or what I was thinking because I took a hit later in that very game and didn't go back in.
Chad,
I as a person that got a free education, and as the first person in my family to ever go to college, I walked out of college without a single dime of student loan debt. If I had a son, under no circumstances would I ever let him play football. And that's scary to think about because I can't be the only person thinking that.
No, Chad, I agree. And frankly, here's what we're going to do, Chad. I'm going to put you on hold here, so don't hang up. You're in Murfreesboro. We're just going to – we give away free stuff, you know, here on the show.
Yeah.
We're just going to give away some MTSU tickets, basketball tickets to you, Chad. Does that sound good to you, man?
Hey, that sounds awesome. Appreciate it.
So yeah, let's put Chad on hold. That was a heck of a call there. A lot of interesting angles from Chad. And, by the way, he will win a pair of tickets, of course, to the Blue Raider basketball game that hosts UTSA at the Murphy Center on Thursday, January 25th. Be sure to catch coverage of MTSU and Marshall, of course, tonight on 94.9 Game 2 with tip-off at 7. That's fascinating to me because you and I were talking a lot during the commercial breaks about sort of the ages of these concussion stuff. We'll get back into the transfer rule in just a second. But this all stemming from the Ryan Johansson hit and how do we legislate intent. And I think that sort of needs to be removed from the game. Like, I think hockey is doing a very good job. It doesn't matter if you meant to hit a guy in the face with your stick. You are responsible for your stick.
Yeah.
It's very comparable to tailgating a car. It doesn't matter if it's somebody else's fault, if it's wet conditions. If you hit somebody else with your car, all that matters is the result, and it was your fault. And the insurance company and the police department's going to come out and handle the accident and go, that's on you.
Right.
It doesn't matter why it happened. It doesn't matter if it was an accident or if you meant to do it. It happened. And so I think trying to figure out how we do that with football is very interesting. And so for me, I'm very similar, minus the college education, to Chad. I played football in middle school in Texas, and then I played football in high school here in Nashville. And I know very specifically of three or four moments where I got my quote-unquote bell rung. It wasn't considered a thing that you came off the field for. You got hit, and you popped right back up, and you went back to the huddle. That's just the way it was, and there was no awareness about this concussion stuff and the long-term damage. I personally haven't felt any effects of it at this age. Now, I didn't play in college, and where he played is where my biggest concern is. To me, playing football in the NFL is like smoking cigarettes. If there's a warning label and you're fully aware of what you're doing, you have the right as an American citizen to sort of do whatever you want in this country. If you know it's bad for you, I just want people to be informed, and that's, of course, the lawsuit the NFL was facing for a long period of time, is that they thought people think they were covering up all of this stuff that they knew ahead of time. My concern isn't the high levels of college football or the NFL. My concern is the mid to low levels of college football, where we have hundreds of thousands of students like Chad, their only opportunity to get an education, and they don't have the financial resources that the big power programs have to take care of their student athletes the right way. And that's the area of football that concerns me the most.
I agree. And my story is different in the sense that I got my bell rung once playing football, but I was in fifth grade playing it. And
that seems early.
I know.
That's bad.
But here's part of the thing is, like, that experience was so miserable going through it. Like, I remember being dizzy and feeling kind of nauseous after the whole thing, and it was, like, for a good day. And I just remember that was so bad, like, it kind of soured me on playing football
right
at that point. And I never played organized football again in, like, a tackle sense. And I just went to baseball and basketball and those sort of things, and I was fine with it. And so that's one of my big things is I think we got to stop having kids play tackle, physical football up until maybe the point of high school. You know, maybe like eighth grade kind of range. But, like, we got to have these kids.
Hockey doesn't allow full checking until a certain age. Why does that not – let's take another page out of hockey's book.
Play flag football, do all those things. You know, the sport itself gives you a ton. The stuff you learn in a huddle, the stuff you learn in the locker room, those experiences, the Friday night lights, all those sort of things, those are remarkable experiences for people, and I think they can really help you in life. There's skills that you take on about being in a team and teamwork and all that stuff. Those are really important things that I think if you just say unequivocally, no, my child's not going to play football, you miss out on those things that you can get from football that you can't necessarily get from other places. And I still think about that from my experience of not playing in high school. There's times I wish I did because of those experiences I know I missed. But at the same time, is it worth it?
Yeah.
And the long-term worth or the long-term risk, maybe not.
Yeah, it's because I think part of the reason, I think you and I are similar in why we get into this business in the first place is just a fundamental foundational belief in sports at its core being great for just the human experience, right? Like discipline, hard work, adversity, teamwork, sacrifice, all the like the cliche things that you learn
growing
up.
Camaraderie, family, all that stuff.
All that stuff is, you know, you lose all that when you're getting a paycheck. But when you're getting a paycheck, you're getting paid for all the dangerous things that you're going through.
Sure.
And at that point, you know what you're going through. As long as you're informed, you can choose to do that, and you're making millions of dollars doing it. So I think it's different. To me, this is about the youth level, and I agree. Ninth grade is the earliest we need to have full-blown tackling. I'd be fine with that. Hockey does it just fine.
Yep.
It's not a big deal to hockey. That's a very physical sport, very fun sport, teaches you all the same stuff, and they have a certain age where you're not allowed to check. Until full checking it comes into, I think it's, I want to say it's 16 years old, somewhere in there that you're allowed to full check. I don't think that could be, that could be the same thing in football, and that would keep people from then saying from birth, nope, like Chad, my kid's not going to play football. Like my wife, if my son, if it ends up being a son in April, my wife's like, nope, not playing football. it'll keep that thing from happening. So we, you know,
discussion we gotta have.
Yeah, it's something that's really, really complicated, obviously. So we'll continue this talk as well. And if you want to chime in, 615-737-1025. We'll get to the transfer rule as well. But Josh Ward gonna join us from WNML when we come back. Go up to Knoxville and talk a little Vols and talk a little football as well. Right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back. ESPN 102.5 The Game, Nashville's best sports talk, and it just got even better. Tune in to the Julian Council Show Saturday mornings starting at 9 a.m. every week. Julian will be giving you the best discussion on all things Nashville sports, along with his thoughts on all of the major national stories as well that you care about. He'll be joined by some of the best guests from around the world of sports. It's the Julian Council Show Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. on Nashville's Best Sports Talk, ESPN 102.5.
He won't even have to shovel his driveway this week before coming in to do the show, so that's even better. Too.
Thank God.
that's a big break for you there, Julian. A big break for you there. The temperatures are supposed to warm up a little bit, yeah, but you know, we're sending all those temperatures to East Tennessee, to where Josh Ward is at WNML in Knoxville. Always a pleasure talking with you, Josh. Yeah, are you ready for those 5-degree temperatures, my friend?
It's currently 12 degrees
okay. In
Knoxville. 12.
Sweet.
That's which is, you know, double digits, which is better than 9 or below. So yeah, we're hanging in there here in East Tennessee.
all right, give me the latest on the Juwan Jennings situation and what type of actual end result this is for Jeremy Pruitt and the coaching staff.
Well, I think Juwan is going to have a really good chance to be with Tennessee's football team. The way I've kind of described it is right now Tennessee is putting in some stipulations for him to join the football program. And I say program instead of team because it's the middle of January. We have a long way to go to get to August and then September to play football this fall. And with Juwan Jennings, he had the video that he put on Instagram the day before Thanksgiving that got so much attention, and that's what so many fans saw. But there were a number of issues for Juwan that led up to that incident for him to be dismissed. And that's why for Juwan to return to Tennessee's football team, it's about doing everything else right off the field, and that's in the classroom, that's making sure you're staying out of trouble, a number of things. He's had a number of incidents, and Juwan is a guy that I've personally liked a lot when I've had a chance to talk to him, which hasn't been often. There's probably a reason they haven't let him talk to us too much, but I think he has a good personality, and his teammates have often supported Juwan because of how hard he plays on the field and how clear he is about being willing to work. So if he's willing to put everything into returning to Tennessee's football team, then he'll be with the Vols this upcoming season, and Tennessee could use him. We kind of hit on it last week. The biggest reason he would get this opportunity is because of how talented he is. He would return as the most proven wide receiver, and Tennessee really missed him, I thought, this past fall. So they're going to do everything they can to try to help him. And for him, if he wants to be an NFL player, and he does, then his best route, I would think, would be to have everything work out and play another season at Tennessee.
Josh, this week we also learned that Quentin Dormady is going to transfer away from Tennessee at the end of the school year. That may be not much of a surprise after he lost the quarterback battle with Jarrett Garantano last year. But with the new coaching staff and now one of your guys at that position leaving, I mean, clearly Garantano is the guy, at least for now, right? And what else do they do at that position in the interim?
Garantano goes into the spring as the guy to beat for the job, because in the spring, at least right now, it would only be Garantano and Will McBride as your only two scholarship quarterbacks. They signed JT Shrout from California last month, but he's coming in the summer. So it's a similar position to last year, actually, except you have less players in the spring. Last year, Tennessee only had three scholarship quarterbacks, but all three went through spring practice. McBride enrolled early. Shrout's coming in the summer. And Tennessee could go after a grad transfer type quarterback. I think all options are open. There was the Yahoo Sports report this week that Alex Thompson from Wagner could be a transfer possibility. And he's a big pro-style quarterback, 6'5 quarterback, that if he were interested in Tennessee and they were to work something out, then he would come in planning to win the job, not to be Jarrett Garantano's backup. And Garantano still has a lot of improving to do. I think everybody would agree with that, Garantano included. But right now, as it stands with Tennessee's current quarterback situation, I would say absolutely Garantano is the guy to beat. And right now, best-case scenario for Tennessee is that he does take those necessary steps and improves. And a lot of that's up to Tyson Helton, Tennessee's new offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach, to get him ready.
I think Will McBride showed some signs that he could be a nice backup, but that's about all. So it does feel like Garantano is the guy. Josh Ward joining us here, WNML in Knoxville, at Josh underscore Ward on Twitter. And Josh, just in general, you look at this roster, you know, I believe that Jeremy Pruitt will probably do a pretty good job coaching up the defense and will probably do a decent job recruiting on that side of the ball. But in the immediate future, this current season, where are your biggest strengths and weaknesses on this roster?
Well, the weaknesses are probably easier to find, especially with guys that have departed, like Khalil McKenzie leaving. That leaves a big hole there in the middle of the defensive line because both of your starting defensive tackles are leaving. And we'll, you know, long term, I think what they want in their personnel is going to change, but starting out, they're just looking for as many big bodies up front as they can find. That's why Tennessee has very quickly offered some junior college linemen, hoping they can help on both the defensive line and the offensive line. I would say both of those groups right now would be considered weaknesses, and that's not good in the SEC to have problems up front. That could change. The offensive line, they already found one junior college guy that they hope can come in and help right away. They have Trey Smith, but he plays one position, not five. Sometimes it looks like he's playing a couple, but I would say the concerns start up front, and quarterback is a concern. There's potential there with Garantano, what we were just talking about, but right now, if you were to look at the quarterback situations around the SEC, Tennessee's is going to rank near the bottom, I think. And in terms of what you feel good about, strengths for Tennessee's football team, I think if they can be healthy at linebacker, getting Darren Kirkland Jr. back, and if they can close out strong, part of what makes this difficult is answering now as opposed to in a few weeks, because they are trying to find some guys that could be instant impact players. But I think at linebacker, if Kirkland comes back, you can start to at least feel a little better about that. Still needs to get better. Corner is a concern because of Rashawn Golden going pro and you lose three seniors. Safety, I think you feel pretty good. Receiver, if you have Juwan Jennings, you feel pretty good. And I like Ty Chandler a lot at running back, but I just don't have a lot of obvious strengths to point to right now for Tennessee. I'm almost grading on a curve when I mention the group of linebackers or maybe a couple of other position groups. Running back's one where you lose John Kelly, but if Jeremy Banks can be an instant impact guy from Memphis and Ty Chandler, Tim Jordan can play well, you can be okay there as long as your offensive line improves.
Josh, Tennessee basketball last night, a tough one on the road at Missouri. The Tigers kind of pulled away in the second half, and there's a furious comeback late that they can't quite get over the hump in a 59-55 loss. This was a team that, to me, looked like it kind of figured things out here in SEC play before last night. Where do you think Rick Barnes and this team stand right now here, you know, maybe the quarter pole of conference play?
I think Tennessee's a good basketball team, and when they're hitting shots from the outside and they're playing good perimeter defense, they can be really good and can play with just about anybody. Had a shot to beat North Carolina, did beat Purdue earlier this season, and Purdue's unbeaten right now in Big Ten play, and has played well against everybody at different stretches, even against Villanova earlier in the season, despite losing that game. So Tennessee has shown that it can go up against anybody and has confidence that it can do that, but last night against Missouri, for example, they really struggled shooting the basketball from the outside, and I think they need more consistency from their guard position. Jordan Bone, Jordan Bowden, Lamonte Turner, James Daniel. It seems like night in, night out, there are a couple of guys they try to count on, but they didn't even get that last night. Grant Williams is the guy they run everything through, and as long as they're doing that, they can be okay offensively, and I think he's an all-SEC level player, and it can be a mismatch issue for opposing teams because he's a longer player than he looks. He doesn't have the height, but he has the length, and that can give him a number of different options of what he can do. But Tennessee also has to be the toughest basketball team on the court, and if it's not, then it'll get outworked like it did against Auburn a couple of weeks ago, and it'll often come up short like it did against Missouri. Missouri's a tough basketball team, and the league, I think, has gotten a lot deeper over the last couple of years. So I guess the summary of the answer would be I think Tennessee's probably a top five or six team in the SEC, and that should be good enough to be in the NCAA tournament. But Tennessee still has a lot to prove or a lot to do to prove that that's true.
Can't imagine that win meant anything to the coach at Missouri. Josh Ward, we appreciate your time, man. Always a pleasure, and we'll talk to you again next week, buddy.
Hey, you got it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Josh.
Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville, at Josh_Ward. Let's get into this transfer rule, because I was going to ask him about it, but we have not had a chance to chime in on it. Kermit Davis with some really strong thoughts on it earlier this hour. I want to get into that as well when we come back. As the NCAA playing with the idea of allowing all players to transfer whenever they want, lots of repercussions for that. So we'll get into that when we come back. Steve Lehman, Braden Gall, ESPN. We are live from Jack Daniel's Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena, 102.5 The Game. Steve Lehman, Braden Gall here. Julian Council producing Back in the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. I want to get into this transfer rule with you. Steve Cavendish going to join us coming up at the top of the hour, but Daryl's been holding for a while and wants to chime in. A lot of different topics today. Kind of refreshing, actually, to get away from the the Titans coaching search for just a few minutes. Daryl, welcome to the show, my friend. How are you? Daryl in Nashville. Are you
pretty
there?
Pretty good. How are y'all?
Hey, there you go, Daryl. What's up, man?
Not much. You know, I was calling on the youth football topic. You know, I've been a youth football coach since I got out of high school for the past 8 years. And I just want to say that, you know, the game is as safe as it's been as in the past 20 years, with helmets being, like, technology in the helmets are insanely good now. And I also want to say, compared to 10 years ago, when coaches weren't getting taught how to teach the proper techniques, you know, coaches now have no choice but to be certified by USA Football, and it teaches everybody how to teach the proper technique. It's made the game as safe as it's been, you know, ever. I just want to say that and stuff. But I just don't think youth football should disappear when it's getting safer, and the kids aren't really generating enough force like the NFL and college players are to, you know, to cause that much head trauma. You know, only time you ever see a concussion in football is if a kid gets really lands weird on his head. And that's, you know, that can happen in basketball or baseball. And that's all I just want to say. And sure. Love the show. Thank you. I just want to listen out.
Yeah, thank you, Daryl.
Yeah, thanks, Daryl. I appreciate the call and good thoughts there. I think the problem you'll hear a lot of people talk about with young kids is their heads haven't fully formed, their brains haven't fully formed. And so it doesn't have to be a huge blow.
Right.
It doesn't have to be a concussion force. It's just the repeated hits there that can do a lot of damage over the long period of time.
And doing away with youth football is not what we're suggesting. We're just saying change the rules a little bit until a certain age.
And also, I mean, I'm all for making it safer. I'm all for teaching the proper techniques and having coaches like Daryl out there who are doing all those things, because as we said before, I think that's where this starts. I think it's very difficult, as we found, whatever you're doing in the NFL right now, it's hard to get guys who, okay, you've played the game like this for 25 years. This has been your entire life. Now we're asking you to do it a little bit differently. It's very difficult to do that. If we're going to change the game and truly how guys are hitting and doling out blows on the field, it has to start with guys like Daryl, the coaches in the grassroots level where you're teaching the fundamentals of the game. You have to get them to start playing football that way, and then have that carry over as they get older.
Yeah, Wyatt on Twitter says, football seems counterintuitive to school. You go to school from 7 to 3 to learn and grow your brain, and then from 4 to 6 you wipe it all away. It's not quite that simple, but I understand where Wyatt's coming from there on Twitter. Adam wants to chime in from Clarksville, good friend of the show. Adam, how are you, man?
Hey, buddy. All right, so I got a couple things for you, because y'all are hitting so many good points this morning. Number one, as far as the what you're talking about as far as safety protocol, if you look at it, you know, there's a lot of players have these crazy big egos and they're fun and that's what people love about them, but they don't wear their equipment properly. And especially these helmets, they're not buckled down right. They're not strapped in tight. If you see a lot of, not concussion, but the ACLs and MCLs and crazy ankle injuries, high sprains, because their cleats aren't being worn properly. They look cool. They got a lot of stuff on them, but they're not being worn properly. So you'll see a lot of injuries because things aren't being worn right. Second point, the point I called in for, these transfers with college are just so crazy to me. This rule is so crazy to me, because if you see all these people that took off of the NFL this year, you know, so they say they took off, still crazy high ratings, but they love college still. But this kind of dilutes it and makes it more professional, if you ask me. It's just, it doesn't really – I guess suggests that somebody's loyal to their schools anymore. It feels more produced. I guess, if players can just go willy-nilly wherever they want to. So I kind of hate it. But, yeah, keep up the good work, you guys. You guys are doing great.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. Appreciate it, man. I'm going to tie these two things together, the concussion stuff and the transfer rule for the NCAA, and here's how I'm going to do that. The reason these things are happening, first of all, the concussion one is obviously is to protect people and their health and safety. The transfer rule is to give more freedom and to give more support to student athletes. Those are both really good, genuine things that mm-hmm. both the NFL, football in general, and the NCAA are trying to do. That's where they come from. The problem is the motives behind that are essentially lawsuit-driven. They're essentially financially driven, because what the NCAA is facing right now is lawsuits across the board challenging their amateur status. So what they want to be able to do, the NCAA, which also gets confusing, Alabama is the NCAA. Ohio State is the NCAA. The NCAA is merely a collection of universities. What they want to be able to do is, in a courtroom or in court proceedings, hold up a bunch of examples of where they did a bunch of stuff to help student athletes. Hey, look, cost of attendance. Hey, look, stipend. Hey, look, free food, unlimited food. Hey, you know, all this other stuff. That's what they want. The NFL, meanwhile, has been fighting lawsuits about knowledge of concussions and CTE, them hiding that information and having it, and that's where those lawsuits have come from. So all of this stems from these organizations being put under pressure from legal ramifications. To me, while it looks on the surface like you're doing something good for the student athlete with this transfer rule, I think it will destroy certain aspects of the sport that will absolutely cause chaos and total upheaval. I just think I'm with Kermit Davis on this. If you are a group of five school, a football or basketball, prepare to lose all of your best players. And it won't. And what Kermit said was interesting. It won't even be guys that are interested in leaving their school until someone comes along and says, hey, why don't you come play at Kentucky? We got an open spot at shooting guard. Why don't you come play at Kentucky? We got an open spot at running back. Why don't you come play at Tennessee? If you're Jeremy Pruitt, wouldn't you be going to every group of five school right now and asking players to come play because you've got weaknesses along the line of scrimmage?
Absolutely, 100%.
Why wouldn't you be doing that?
And the other thing you offer there is, he used the example of Reggie Upshaw, but the other thing you say there is, if you're Kentucky, you got a better chance of going to the league if you come play at Kentucky than if you stay at Middle Tennessee. That's the problem with this, is guys are just going to get poached, and it will turn into free agency every offseason. And so not just are you going to be recruiting high school kids and junior college kids, trying to get them to come to your program and be a part of your recruiting class, but you're essentially going to have to re-recruit your roster every year to make sure that they're sticking around. And that's a huge, huge problem. And it's not just going to be after the season. He brought up the example about August as well. Somebody loses somebody. Somebody's ruled academically ineligible. Why don't you just go out and find somebody? Because if that guy has no punishment, if he doesn't have to sit out a season, if he's immediately eligible,
right,
he could leave in August and he can enroll and be fine.
Let's say you're Georgia, and obviously it's not necessarily the case for a lot of these big power programs. Like, I'm not going to use Tua Tagovailoa as an example because they've got Jalen Hurts right now. But let's say you're Georgia, and Jacob Eason's transferring to Washington. He's off campus. Georgia, Jake Fromm goes down with a torn ACL the first week of practice in camp. If I'm Kirby Smart, the smart thing to do is to immediately go look at every other quarterback battle in the country and say, which one of those guys best fits my system? How do I get them to come to Georgia immediately and play right now? I got 5 weeks of training camp to get them ready. Let's go do it. And that's what's going to happen. And then all of a sudden you've got 72 other coaches having to battle another coach coming onto their campus to take their players immediately from them. So there's lots of different ways that we can make this rule better. It is beyond comprehension that the NCAA would put it in place without any addendums whatsoever.
It doesn't seem like they've asked coaches about it. And here's the other thing. Already people have talked about how bad the grad transfer rule is in terms of what it meant. Like, it's good for the player, for sure. It gives them an opportunity, if they've graduated, to move on without punishment. That's fine. But we've seen transfers, especially in basketball, prolifically explode.
Yes.
Since that's come in. If you make this rule, it's only going to get worse.
And I'm actually 100% for the graduate transfer rule, because once you have fulfilled your obligation to the university, you have a degree, I think you should be free to do whatever
Me
you want to do.
Me too, but the it has made transferring a prolific thing by doing that. If you make this rule where you can transfer with no penalty at any point in your career,
it's crazy.
Oh my gosh, everybody's a free agent.
It's crazy, because the bottom line is we should be trying to get kids educated, so if you've earned your degree, you've accomplished that goal, then I sort of hey, you've earned your degree.
Sure.
I'm good.
Transferring
with you,
after
with you
your freshman on. Year does not help you get educated.
It does not. But it looks like they're saying 95% chance. Matt Schick reported this from ESPN that there's a 95% chance that this could be passed beyond comprehension. We'll ask Steve Cavendish, former editor of the Nashville Scene, what he thinks about this as well. So we'll do that when we come back. Steve Lehman, Braden Gall, ESPN 102.5 The Game.